Hi, I'm Lee Chantel from VivaLaVegan.net.
I'm Chris.
And today, our guest we have with us is Jeremy Staples. And Jeremy is actually the person who suggested that Chris and I start this podcast. So it's very exciting for us to have you here, Jeremy. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's good to be here. And I guess it was quite an offhand comment, but I think both you guys are, I think it's just a good combination of humour
and seriousness.
Yeah. And I think two people who I see as doers, you know, you talk about stuff and you actually do it. So it's definitely something that I respect.
Thank you. That's lovely. And we were speaking about Jeremy in some of our previous podcasts as well. I hope you've heard them. Chris and I did one on Japan for our first podcast. And we did a second one with Corey Levitin, who writes for Men's Health. And we spoke a lot about Las Vegas and various other things. And we mentioned that Jeremy, who's our mutual friend, was in New Zealand doing a cycling trip around there for 5 weeks, wasn't it?
Yeah, 5 weeks. Yeah.
So we'll talk a bit about that today. So
did you bring a map?
I did.
Oh, good.
I'm not sure how that's going to...
Can we start off with the map and then we'll ask questions as we go?
I love maps. Come on, have you got it?
It's just a big map. I don't know how it's going to translate on such a tiny screen, but...
Just hold it up.
And if people are just listening to the audio, you can have a look at youtube.com/VivaLaVegan.net for the visual.
And Lee Chantel will edit this in, so it's just a map right now.
No, I won't. No editing, Chris.
Maybe is that Tasmania?
Maybe put it back a bit. I'm not sure. What do you exactly want to see from it, Chris?
I thought it might have been marked out of where it went.
No, I haven't marked it out, but I've got a list of where I went. But the ride itself was roughly 2,500 Ks.
Jeez.
So do you want to tell us about it, Jeremy? Like, where did you go? Like, what was the reasoning for it?
Yeah, I think it was,
five weeks? That sounds long.
Yeah, I guess I did the trip as something as a bit of a reboot for, I just finished working at an art gallery at Bundaberg, and full-time work. I haven't actually had a full-time job in close to a decade, so full-time work was a pretty huge struggle, and... just needed to get out of the country and go actually have a real holiday, and it was pretty funny realizing that I actually haven't done a holiday that didn't, I guess, include other work elements. And even though my work, I guess what I'm engaged highly with is self-publishing and predominantly zines, I don't even know if I'd actually classify it as work. It's something that I love and very passionate about, but this trip wasn't about that. It was just about vagabonding and freedom of just riding around on a bicycle and seeing a place that haven't been before. So discovering an island and a culture that, it was just such a life-changing trip that, it's so hard to just explain it in a short period. But, amazing.
Cool.
So did you get into zoning whilst you were riding,
What do you mean
instead,
by zoning?
Instead of it, where it kind of becomes... natural, where you're not necessarily focusing on the riding part and you kind of lose that bit where it's kind of frustrating that you're stuck riding all day, your prostate hurts and whatever, and you kind of just zone, you take in a lot of the experience,
Yeah, well, I think, well, let's cover the prostate bit. We've actually spoken about your bicycle seat already, and your bicycle seat is like, I was saying to LC that it's sort of like
two seats. Yeah. It cups your bum. It's like sitting on a cloud. However, I do get a bit. If I do long distance riding, I gotta shave my bum a little bit. Otherwise, it pulls the hairs out after a while. But yeah, carry on.
Thank you for that visual.
Yeah, I'll email you a photo if you flash up on the screen.
We can do that. We can do that Fight Club sort of splash up sort of thing, just sporadically through the podcast.
No, we're not. I don't like editing.
But I think. The trip was just, it was such an amazing experience, and I was explaining to Elsie beforehand that the days were just so epic. Like, you'd get up at 8 o'clock and have some food and go for a ride, and the ride, varied between, 60 to 140 kilometres each day, just depending on sort of the hills. It really came back down to the hills of just, but yeah, the funny thing is after a while getting more south on the island, So I rode around the North Island, so I didn't get to the South this trip, even though most people, I guess tourists, head straight to the South because it's less developed and more landscapey and things like that. But that said, I had an amazing trip on the North Island, and I can probably say I've seen more of the North Island than most people who live in New Zealand.
Wow.
But I think, you know, the hills were such a struggle early on, but it only took maybe 3 or 4 days to actually, I guess, get to a certain fitness level, and even just mentally, just taking on a hill that... These hills aren't hills, they're like 6 kilometer inclines that just are just absolutely crazy. And the thing was, later in the trip, where the southern part of the island, where it was flatter, actually started missing the challenge of like accomplishing this massive hill and feeling like you've achieved something really amazing.
And did you set yourself goals like that? Like, did you go, this is how far I want to go in a day, or this is where I want to aim for? Or did you have things booked along the way, like, I want to see this place or stay at this place?
Yeah, I guess I did a bit of research with, I guess, some places that I wanted to visit. But I think as soon as I started booking things in for certain days, the holiday became less of a holiday and more, it became really demanding, and the pressures of actually, okay, I need to do X kilometres this day. And I think that sort of, that only really happened at the end of the trip, because I organised a rental return car towards the end of it. But I think having that freedom to actually not commit to saying, oh, I'm going to go do this on this day, just that freedom of like, actually, I've got to this town and have found that, you know, it's absolutely amazing and I want to spend more time here. Or, you know, I think every sort of week, each 7 days, having a day off or more in that period is something that I sort of came up with. Yeah.
And so for, what were you doing? You were just cycling around? Did you just stay in places in particular? Did you stay by the side of the road under the stars? That's always good.
Yeah, totally. So I guess I should, a little bit of background with the bike. So the bicycle had front and rear panniers, which are just the bags, and also some bags at the back. And I was set up so I could be fully self-sustainable. So I had cooking equipment, tents, you know, I actually had a little mini solar panel as well that I could charge, bicycle lights, a GPS, and a mobile phone and things like that. So the trip did entail, I guess, in New Zealand they call it freedom camping, so it is just that more wild camping of just side of the road and things like that. And I guess New Zealand's a little bit more open to, I don't know, for example, hitchhiking is legal. People do it, and that's totally fine. There's no laws or anything against it there. There's definitely laws against camping in certain areas, but there's so much land there, you can find a little spot behind a tree and be out of harm's way or visual way. So yeah, there was definitely lots of just freedom camping, but there's a lot of free camp spots as well. But also their conservation sort of parks and stuff like that also have sort of cheap camping as well.
Any questions, Chris?
No, I'm just taking it in.
That's good. I'll just keep up with the questions then. I'm sure you'll let us know if you have a question. So where did you eat? Tell us about the vegan food.
Oh, the vegan food. Yeah.
Tell us about vegan food on the road. That's what I'm more interested
in. Okay, yeah. Well, what was cool is the second day I was actually in New Zealand, I actually met up with a fellow vegan who was doing a year bicycle trip. Michael.
What?
Yeah. So he's...
So how long did you spend with him?
3 weeks. So yeah, it was what was really cool was actually, like, every time I've been overseas, I've always done sort of a solo thing. And it probably only dawned on me right towards the end that we're traveling together that this was the first person I've actually traveled overseas with. So it was really cool to sort of, I guess, share that experience, but also the early during that ride of, like, the challenges of doing these big hills when you're not physically capable, or probably even mentally, just even seeing that hill and, you know, trying to conquer that and doing that together. But Michael, who was from Amsterdam, he definitely a bit of a chef, but also someone who ate a lot. I joked around a lot and about how much food he ate, but he was eating verging on a loaf of bread a day. Huge metabolism. I feel, reflecting on it, I feel like a bit of a bully that I gave him so much crap about eating so much bread. But he loved his bread, and he was always trying to find a bakery that would, like, bake fresh, decent, non-white bread. Bit of a mission.
I'm sure.
But even just vegan food in a supermarket that are, like, the mock meats and even tofu was definitely a bit of a struggle in towns outside of the bigger places. So sort of Whangarei, Wellington and Auckland, you know, totally accessible. But it's funny, sort of the more touristy towns did have, you know, your tofus, your tempehs, your mock meats and things like that. But the price of them, you know, Americans and travellers come to Australia and complain about how expensive stuff is here. They haven't seen New Zealand, where things are actually twice the price of what they are.
So what's a thing of tofu worth?
I can't think of what a thing of tofu, but one thing that I did remember that I brought up was the, you know, those Kingland yogurts. So they're little tubs of yogurt that are
probably
There's a pack of four of them. They're, 150, 200 grams. They were about $12.
What?
Yeah. And they'd probably be about six here or five, something like that, wouldn't they?
Yeah. They're not a sponsor of you, are they, LC?
No, not yet. If anyone would like to be a sponsor, get in touch.
Oh, they won't, because when I say how much their food tastes like clay,
like
all of their food, I don't know what they do to their tofu, but...
I like it. Kingland, Soyland, I like your stuff.
But there is actually a New Zealand organic vegan brand called Tunzu who do their sausages, and they also do like a litre yogurt. But it's only, it's plain and it's unsweetened. And
what?
So, yeah.
I'd like that.
That's too much.
Yeah. It's, I bought one once and I tried to buy it again, but it was, I only ever saw it once in a shop, and that was even like in Auckland, I couldn't find it. So.
How long did it last?
The yogurt.
Yeah, the leader. Did you mix it with stuff?
I should. If I had anything to mix with it, I would have, because it was just, it was bland.
Yeah. I always loved plain yogurt when I was younger. BV, before vegan, I always loved plain yogurt.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But unsweetened as well.
What kind of plain yogurt though? Like, are you talking like Greek yogurt, which is like acidic?
Yeah, it's more acidic. I would say
not
it's
like,
Greek
not
yogurt.
Not like snack pack yogurt, where it's
When I was a kid, I was a huge Go-Go Gorilla guy. Those things, like chocolate-flavoured ones? Oh, my God. For some reason, my mum used to buy hundreds of them and freeze them. And I used to eat them like, you know, kids used to freeze poppers?
Yeah.
I used to eat them like that. They were delicious.
We call juice boxes poppers over here in Australia.
Yeah, there
juice
was...
Box.
There was definitely a bunch of quirky things that, you know, for listeners overseas, you know, I think everyone laughs about our, well, you'd call them flip-flops in America, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're thongs in Australia, but in New Zealand, they're jandals.
Oh, okay.
Our very racist term of our cooler box is the Esky in Australia. But
is that racist?
Well,
it's
racist but towards the Eskimos, the actual...
Wow,
yeah.
I never thought of that.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Totally is.
Yeah, I only realised that when I called it an Esky in America, and someone goes, I probably shouldn't say that.
Oh, wow, never thought of that.
But yeah, it's the chiller box in...
The chillabin.
Chillabin, that's right, the chillabin.
Your friend on the fridge.
But
Was there any problems with the language barrier
in New Zealand?
Because, you know, you can talk to a Kiwi and they have no fucking idea what you say.
Yeah. I think the bigger issue was the Maori language and the translation of the town names. Because towns that start with WH, like... Whangarei, for example, is actually spelt WH, whatever. Like, so.
Thunga, as in TH?
Yeah, well, give me a look here. I can spell it out to you. It's actually spelt Whangarei, but it's actually pronounced Whangarei. And same with Whakatane. It's WH.
What was that one?
Yeah, you'd like that one.
Whakatane.
There's no swearing.
Yeah, we did plan this to be non-explicit.
Oh,
but it's the name of the town.
Now.
It's the name of the town.
No, I'm just saying because of Chris. It's explicit.
I'm sure there'll be one that doesn't have swearing in it. The time I'm sick.
But what was cool is while I was riding around, I actually downloaded both podcasts and have some good memories of... the first one, I was actually in a place called Kaikohe, which is in the Northlands above above Auckland. And it was at this geothermal spa. So there was sort of seven different spas. Each spa was actually connected to... So these were natural spas. Connected to a sort of a different stream underground. So each stream had sort of different minerals in each bath, but also different temperatures. So there was the I don't know, they were had heaps of funny names, but one was the lobster and it was like 42 degrees. Mm. It was awesome. So good.
That's warm.
Yeah.
What's the hot one? Did they have like the hot spa?
Yeah, they had a
It's 45 degrees is warm. You know, and you go to there and they've got like a 53 degree one. Like, who sits in that for long?
So is this in Japan? Because they've definitely got this.
No, in New Zealand. In, you know, Lake Taupo.
Yeah, yeah, yep.
Yeah, too hot.
Have
too
you been
hot,
there,
man.
Chris?
Sorry?
You've been to New Zealand?
Yeah, we went there a few times when I was a kid.
I went.
I like it. I have mixed feelings about New Zealand, though, because it's kind of, there's so much to do, but... It's almost impossible to ever go there on a holiday, you know, unless you're going to like a tiny spot, you know. So there's lots of traveling in between, you know, and if you just kind of go there and just relax, it's a much nicer place than going there for a holiday.
Yeah, there was I definitely encountered lots of people who sort of just had a tick box list where they would just literally get to that destination, take a photo, tick it off, and then get to the next one. And I think that's where the cycling... Because I did a small little bit of driving and it was just such a different experience being in the car and not...
Oh, don't touch that.
Chris is having some...
Sorry.
Is that Izzy? Hi, Izzy. Chris is...
Say hello.
Obviously
in She's getting in. She's hello, eating Izzy. The cheese.
Hello.
Can you see her?
Beach.
Hello. Beach.
Say hello.
Beach.
Do you remember Jeremy? You haven't met him.
No, I haven't actually met Izzy yet.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
So, tell me, you got a bit of a list of what's that, where you've been. Do you want to tell us?
Yeah, I guess I can quickly run down because it's not super exciting for others, I don't think.
Well, if you've been to New Zealand or if you want to go to New Zealand, especially if you want to cycle.
I think New Zealand does have a great reputation for being a great cycle holiday destination, a touring destination. Not all the roads are really made for it. There is not a lot of room to actually get off the road or things like that. But I think there's a good challenges and just, I guess, since it is small in relative, like, terms, like comparing it to Australia. So, there was a number of cyclists that were doing holidays while I was over there from the UK, lots of Germans and lots of people doing it. And, met a Australian travelling around doing a cycle holiday and whatnot. But, so pretty much...
Fit here, Chris.
Chris is consuming some of his homemade cheese that he was showing off earlier.
Mm.
And, you know, there's nothing beats watching some guy on a YouTube, like a podcast munching on food. Don't put that microphone too close, man. We can hear everything.
Can you?
No, not really. So tell us about where you went, Jeremy.
I went north of Auckland and spent roughly about 2 weeks up there, travelling through there. And what was amazing was there was this part of the trip was a 50-kilometre bicycle ride on the beach. So it was low tide. The sand was rock hard. So most people, if they do know a little bit about New Zealand and cycling, they're probably thinking 90 Mile Beach was pretty much the tip up there. But this is actually on the west coast further down from Puto Point to Daggerville. And it's sort of a bit of a tip off via one of the cycling books that I got before going. And it was just absolutely amazing. But pretty much going up that coast and getting to the Waipao Forest, which is, I guess, quite famous for the kauri trees, which are... a very ancient tree that, you know, is the size of a small house, the base of it. And unfortunately, logging has sort of destroyed a large majority of it. And what's quite amazing about these trees is a lot of them have fallen down in swamps and been preserved over the years. So you can get these amazing, like, wooden artworks. Like, you can't actually cut these trees down anymore. They're protected trees, but lots of furniture and art and whatnot is getting made from these, from the preserved wood that's been rotting in there.
Cool.
But yeah, so, and then I sort of got quite popular area is the Bay of Islands and did some sailing and some riding and snorkeling and stuff around there, which was quite amazing. And then I guess I, you know, this, I don't know, it's so hard to sum this up in a short period, but like getting back down towards Arfungaray and discovering some undeveloped caves. So,
oh, that would
be cool. Yeah, so pretty much an undeveloped cave, you know, I don't know, you've been to a cave before?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, and
who hasn't been to a cave?
Well, there's probably tons of people.
I hope people go to a cave now if they have not before.
Amazing. So these are undeveloped caves, so there's a bit of a, like a bit of a dirt track there, you know, a bit of signage saying, you know, stay safe and whatever. But generally, like, you get in this cave and there's no safety barriers, there's no steps, there's no anything. And it just finished raining, so it was quite slippery and whatnot. But we're really glad went further into the caves, and the sheer amount of glowworms were nearly, like, glowing. The entire cave was just absolutely amazing.
I love glowworms.
Yeah, so that was quite cool. And then, you know, getting further down, going through Rotorua, which I think that Rotorua and sort of geothermal area was definitely a highlight. Mm-hmm. I think all the natural geothermal pools and stuff like that just... I don't know, it's something pretty magical of being in, like, a waterfall that's so hot and just natural and just, you know, and just knowing that the Maoris used these sort of locations to cook food or healing and things like that. It's just really, really cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
Did you have a favourite spot? Probably that, the geothermal.
Yeah, I reckon all that. Like, I think that was probably definitely a highlight.
But what about the smell?
You don't even smell it after a while.
Yes, you do, and it's in your clothes, it's gross.
Yeah, you can't, that's one thing that was definitely a bit of a, and once it's in your clothes, it actually starts rotting your clothes as well, and,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Because it's sulfur, right?
Yeah, it's sulfur. So yeah, people who don't know what we're talking about, it pretty much smells like eggs.
Mm.
So the sulfur and, but you know, I think you just...
It doesn't smell like eggs, it smells like an egg fart. The whole town smells like an egg fart. It's disgusting.
It's. Yeah.
I remember when, the first time I went there when I was a kid, my parents thought it was a hilarious practical joke. And they're like, they were looking back to see if we were going, what the f*** is that? Doesn't matter. That's a story for another day.
Yeah. But I think another highlight, and it's quite popular as well, is doing the... all these towns that just struggle with pronunciation, so I do apologise to anyone from New Zealand or anyone who actually knows how to pronounce these towns. But the Torogarigo Alpine Crossing, which is one of the top 10 day walks in the world, and it's just absolutely amazing because, you know, it became quite famous recently with Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, because there's Mount Doom is one of their mountains that you sort of go near. But the walk, you know, there's two amazing lakes. There's also an active volcano and Mount Ruapehu, which was crazy. After the walk, I did a ride, a 60-kilometre ride, and it just got colder and colder through the ride. And that next day, found out it actually snowed that night on Ruapehu. So this is the middle of summer for everyone who could be dealing with winter, but this is the middle of summer in New Zealand. It's snowing and absolutely freezing.
Too cold for me, I think.
Yeah.
So what would be the tips you'd give if someone wants to do a similar sort of thing? What would you say? A lot of preparation? Did you do much preparation?
I think a lot of people freak out about level of fitness, and I don't think it's as much of a big thing. And I think these same tips would probably be utilised for anything, from organising an art show to a vegan festival or whatever. Is I think just lock some dates down in getting that down so you're aware of it. But I think the big thing is just being mentally prepared as well. Like, it's quite a struggle when you are going up these 8-kilometre hills and you're just looking at it and going, this is impossible.
Yeah.
Like, getting your head down. And I think there's so many great analogies to the whole trip. It was just like, look at the ground and just pedal as much as you can. And
break everything down.
Yeah. So
small bits.
Process there. Yeah, totally. And I think just having a few key destinations, but realize that you may not be able to do them because it's, you know, 600 kilometers away and things like that. But yeah, I think having a bike that's, is capable of doing something, like you can do it with any bike, but there's definitely things that you want to have a reasonably versatile tyre that's not too thin, not too thick. So if you are doing dirt roads or on the road, like, it's not too disadvantaging either way.
And did you bring your own bike over?
I did, yeah. And that was quite, it was interesting. This was the first time I've travelled with my bicycle. And the process of getting a bike on a plane, so straightforward. It's just classified as a standard piece of luggage.
Like extra luggage, like the bigger one or not?
No, it's classified, yeah. You do have to take it to the oversized thing. But if you've got, say, two bags as your part of your baggage, like, that's just going to be classified as a bag.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, a lot of people, you know, the issue is if you're going to hire a bike and you're doing a longer trip, it's going to cost more than that. So I did meet a lot of people who were buying bicycles over there,
okay,
and they'd just sell them back once they've done their tour.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, I think just having a bit of a time frame and adding some more time to it, because I know if I probably needed another couple of weeks to feel like I could go see everything and stuff like that. I'm getting a decent guidebook, but not totally relying on it. Like, the guidebook I had was just absolutely amazing, and lots of, I guess one thing that New Zealand's really great at is using old railway lines and turning them into bicycle tracks and things like that. So that was really cool. But
like, talking technology, what kind of, you used a, what's name, bike, like a touring bike?
No, well, I've got a flat-handled road bike, so it's not an expensive bike. I think I purchased it for maybe $300. So, you know, I would definitely encourage having that flat-handled bike. You're on holidays, you want to look around and see stuff. Like, having a road bike, you're in a position where you're actually sort of looking at the ground.
It's bad on your hips,
absolutely bad. Like, you'll be in a really bad shape at the end of a decent cycle.
So you didn't have a touring bike, so you were kind of hunched over anyway.
No, well, I was sitting in a, like, it is a cycle holiday touring bicycle, so it is flat-handled with the extension bars and things like that. But, you know, it was definitely an entry-level bicycle. But, you know, I was riding with Michael, who, you know, he had, like, a $2,500 bicycle, and it's set up for cycle holidays, and, you know, I kept up. It wasn't an issue. So, you know, you can do any of these, any sort of cycle holiday, you know, even if it's just a weekend away. Like, it's surprising how adapted you become when you know, I think I probably had about 35 kilos strapped to all my bike, and you just didn't know any different. Like, you just adapted to what you were pushing along. So, yeah.
And did you lose weight? Were you losing any, losing muscle at all?
No, I think I lost about 5 kilos, which is, I think, just in beer, but I was drinking beer every day, so I put it back on. So, but you're definitely sweating lots. Like, I was definitely drinking 6 to 8 liters of water a day.
Because what's the weather like in Northern New Zealand? Is it similar to similar to New South Wales?
Yeah.
Victoria?
Yeah, totally. Like, when you got further south, like Rotorua and Taupo and stuff like that, it was definitely getting a lot colder because it was a lot higher up as well.
What's a lot colder?
Say
nighttime, would it get down to, like, say 10 degrees, 15?
Lower. So it was single digits in around these colder areas. But higher up, it was fine. It wasn't an issue at all. Like, I think lows was maybe 16 in North Island, New Zealand. Yeah.
Yeah. And what about daytime temperature?
It was definitely, you know, it's the middle of summer as well over there, but it just didn't have the humidity and it was, you know, 20 to 25 degrees. So
yeah, that's perfect. That's my kind of weather.
Mm.
Yeah.
I can live in that forever.
Yes.
25 during the day as a maximum.
Yeah.
That's fine. I hate 26 degrees. Can't cop it.
Yeah.
It's too hot. You know?
I'm fine. Anything up to about 30 something, I'm okay.
Yeah, no, it was definitely, you know, I felt it today. Like, I rode over here and just the humidity, like, it's just gross. Like, Brisbane's like, I call it the urban jungle, like, because it's just the humidity, like, it can be like 90 to 100% sometimes. Like, it's just gross.
And you missed some, oh no, you were here, it was horrible weather.
Yeah.
We had some very hot days, and we've just had some raining for a few days. Did you hear about the cyclone and everything over here, Chris?
Yeah, everyone talked about it.
Did you hear about the earthquake?
There was an earthquake?
Yeah.
Where?
You didn't get... There was a level 5...
Oh, yeah, in Maribara.
Oh, yeah, Maribara and Bundaberg. I guess I'm plugged into all the Bundaberg stuff at the moment due to just finishing work there. But, yeah, but Brisbane also got hit as well. It was 2 o'clock in the morning maybe a week ago. And Brisbane, it was very mild. It was like a friend just mentioned yesterday that his house creaked for about a minute.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, I missed that.
It's all happening.
Yeah. We've had an earthquake here since I've been here. It was awesome.
Was it?
Nah, I didn't feel it. Mickey felt it.
When I was in Nara, just outside of Kyoto. Is that where Nara?
Like Nara, Kyoto.
Yeah.
Wakayama, Kobe. They're all like within half an hour of Osaka.
Yeah. So when I was there, I actually just slept in a park, and like, because it's just so safe in Japan, like. Like, when I woke up, there was just, like, 5 other drunk businessmen sleeping around me with feral cats.
Pissing on you.
But I was more worried about the deer. I guess the deer is what it's pretty famous for, because there's wild deer everywhere.
And what, eating you?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Nah, I'm not eating you, but... Yeah, the deers are pretty aggressive. I've only seen it on YouTube. It's only half an hour away, but I've never been.
Oh, you need to go, Chris. Take the family, man.
Yeah, one day.
Yeah.
It's a long way to go. I've been to the SeaWorld Nara Resort when I was a kid. That's halfway there, right?
Close. Let's not talk about the animal cruelty associated with that, but anyway.
So what have you been up to, Chris? Tell us what you've been doing.
Yeah, nothing much. Just working on the same stuff. Painting, vacuuming, making cupboards. Yeah, nothing. Nothing as exciting as riding around New Zealand.
And have you heard about all the stuff that's been going on online recently?
Maybe. What kind of stuff?
Well, the biggest thing the past week that's happened in Australia is the Greyhound Racing documentary.
That was on
Four Corners on the ABC. And if anyone doesn't know what I'm talking about, check out iview.abc.net.au. And they actually did some uncovering of live baiting in the racing industry, the greyhound racing. And Jeremy, yeah. You actually watched a lot of it.
I got the email. Chris, did you watch it?
No, I haven't seen it, but I grew up next to greyhound race owners, so I know about live baiting and stuff like that. One of the greyhounds was next door to us today and went on to win about 6 races in a row, so, you know, you can understand why they do it. However, I can't understand why it's still, you know, so Chris, a practice that we accept in Australia, you know?
Well, I don't think it is at the moment, because there's been a lot of uproar about it, and a lot of sponsors and people have pulled out from sponsoring greyhounds, and the ex-captain of the Brisbane Lions AFL team, he actually just stepped down from his greyhound racing ambassador spot, Jonathan Brown, so I'm very, very happy about that.
Yeah, did Plugger step down?
Don't know. Is he another one?
Yeah, he owns heaps of greyhounds.
There's quite a few sports people who do.
Terry Hill. Yeah, when I was a kid, I wasn't into greyhound racing, obviously, but yeah, it was something I heard a lot about because our next door neighbor was right into it.
So Chris, it might be like, I guess I didn't really know what the live, when someone said live baiting, I didn't actually know what that actually was. Chris, what is live baiting?
Well, from my understanding, and I certainly didn't see the documentary, but live baiting, something similar to giving someone, like, you know, like you give a dog a kill and they race faster, or they kind of hunt after the rabbit, like, because, you know, greyhounds are essentially psychopaths, right? Like, they're like trained to kill rabbits, right? So that's what that thing that goes around the track is. They're chasing that to kill it. Mm. You know that? You get that?
Yep.
So, yeah, they give it a kill and it's got that taste for blood or whatever, and then it's more likely to run faster to get that kill because killing something's such an adrenaline rush. Mm. I guess it's the same reason people go hunting and, you know, killers kill people. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a massive adrenaline rush to kill someone or something. I've heard.
So I watched the documentary, and I think I'm the only one that did, which is poor
out
form.
Of this, yes.
Come on.
I know what happened in it, and I followed what the aftermath of it, but I just can't watch those things anymore.
Yeah, I'm...
Was I right, though?
Yeah, pretty much, but what... Pretty... Expanding on upon that, like, the animals are all alive. They're strapping live pigs, possums, and rabbits to the actual machine that spins around. And, you know, they will allow the dog to have a bit of a chew before it starts running. And then they'll just let this poor defenseless creature just keep going around. And, like, it gets to a point where the animal is still alive but getting torn in half while it still goes around.
It's horrible.
So, you know, it's... I knew what was, you know, interesting while I... You know, I tried... I avoided social media pretty much the whole trip, but when I was organising getting back and all that sort of stuff, I jumped on and I just saw all these people who would never normally engage with any sort of animal rights or activism, and they were just sharing and posting all the live baiting stuff. And so I knew something was happening, and then got the email from you guys saying, hey, this documentary's about to come out. And I definitely have to congratulate Four Corners, ABC. Mm. They did an amazing job uncovering, but I think, you know, thanks to all of
I think all those stories are done by Animals Australia.
Yeah,
well, then... that one was Animal Liberation, I believe.
Oh, okay. But yeah, they're definitely stories that I think they lobby very hard for the ABC to put those on or to do a story on them. And yeah, I don't necessarily think it's the ABC, you know, making a decision to start doing stuff like that. I think they're being lobbied very hard by those groups.
Yeah,
it's
I think...
still good that they can do it.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think it's just good that they actually made it happen, which was quite cool. And it was obvious, you know, tons of people who were, you know, doing direct action and getting in there and putting a lot of cameras and getting this footage. And that footage, you know, is now getting used in courts, you know, processing people. And, you know, the people who are multimillionaires via greyhound racing are now facing a 2-year sentence, which...
And they've fired a lot of people from the industry as well, and... yeah, it's. I guess it's good. Like, for me, the issue is, like, we shouldn't be using animals, full stop. And it doesn't matter whether or not you're live baiting an animal. Like, I disagree with greyhound racing, you know, on a whole. And there's so many different aspects to greyhound racing that are also bad that I wish maybe they would have, you know, gone over those a bit. Like, instead of just it being one sort of aspect of it. But, you know, obviously... It's got out to people that wouldn't have paid any attention, like you said, people who are not activists or something. And similar to all that live trade stuff that happened a few years ago, which was an Animals Australia operation, and there was a lot of social media stuff with that. And I don't think it's as big as that, obviously, but I think a lot of people are talking about it.
Yeah, I think... I don't know,
can I give you an interesting take on why it's not as big as that?
Why?
Racism.
Yeah, because it's not about overseas. Yeah, yeah.
I definitely think that that was much bigger because of the religion involved and the country involved.
Yeah, well, definitely. A lot of people were saying, well, that doesn't happen in Australia. That happens in other countries. So that was a massive issue, yeah. Okay.
And it really cropped up around about the same time. They were having horrible troubles with people coming here on boat or coming to Australia on boats, you know? So the government really kind of like, it was something they could cling on to show that they were doing something, you know? So I think they really played on, like, race tensions as well as, you know, no, I don't think it was necessarily much to do with animal rights is what people tend to think it was.
Well, I think it's not like saying it's about animal rights, but just taking anything that's talking about these issues that's normally not in mainstream media. Like, that's always a positive thing, and to get the discussion happening is always good. And whether or not something happens from it, like, I remember with all the live trade stuff, there were so many people that were so anti that, and, you know, the trade was stopped, I think it was 10 days, but now, it, you know, it happened again, and there's still people talking about it, and, you know, the aim, I'm not sure what the aim was with that and what actually came from it, whereas this, at least people, you know, are losing their jobs.
Definitely.
You know, they've been fined, people are pulling sponsorship money out.
But there is so much that, like, that's kind of similar to that. I think horse racing, you know, there's so many horses die every year. You hear about the one that dies during the Melbourne Cup. You never hear about the 25 that happened the day before.
Well, I think it was good this year, though, Chris, that, you know, there was three horses that were put down, and mainstream media covered it exceptionally well. Like, I think it was actually a bigger news story than who actually won the race.
Mm.
So I think that was really a big turn of events, where normally it's something that they try to do behind the scenes and don't even speak about. Let's just not bring our friend Lugsy talking about his horses and stuff into the game, hey?
And I think...
But, you know, like, I got... The thing is, he doesn't do that because he hates animals, you know? He does it because he loves animals. You know what I mean? Like, it's such a difficult thing to talk about, you know? Particularly when it's something... When it is something like that, you know? It's very difficult to ever have the conversation.
Well, I have the conversation quite a bit with him where, you know, and he's, you know, he's quite, you know, he's not defensive about it, like, but he'll back up the level of care that goes into that horse. Like, there's a goal.
No, but he does it because he loves the horse, right? He loves his horse.
I think he likes the thrill of it all, and, like, I don't know what he, but, like...
But, like, he loves the whole lot. He doesn't do it because he hates the horse.
Definitely not, no.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't think people eat bacon because they hate pigs. You know, there's a lot of things people do where they kind of, you know, they can't, everyone needs to be able to wear two hats at any time, you know, they're one that does the thing and the other one that kind of makes an excuse for it, you know, and we all do it. Like, I make excuses for everything. Like, at the moment I'm ignoring someone that I know is here in Japan that I could go and hang out with, but, you know, I kind of don't want to, you know what I mean? So, yeah, it's real, like, we kind of always wear two hats.
Well, I think it's, I don't know, like, the Greyhound Racing, you know, documentary that got shown recently, like, the thing that they were really pushing was, like, the poor defenseless animal was strapped to the thing, and I'm like, the majority of viewers, they eat bacon, or they eat these meats that are getting strapped to the thing, or they'll hit a possum and not think too much of it. Like, I think it was quite contradictory of, like, that angle that they were pushing, and that link of, like, I don't know, just, like, when people actually see the cruelty compared to the processed item that they purchase in the shop that is so disconnected from a living being.
I think it's just outrage in general. There's so many people that just want to be outraged about everything because then it's not them. They're not taking responsibility of it at all. They're just going, oh, it's that person's fault, it's that company's fault, it's this industry's fault, and you can get as outrageous as you want about anything. It's just another thing to be outraged about. Greyhounds this week, Kim Kardashian's butt a few weeks ago. There's always going to be something
else. Kim Kardashian's what?
Her butt, her buttocks.
All right.
Derriere.
Yeah.
Did you see the photo?
What were people complaining about it for?
Well, she was full on naked with oil on the front of a magazine cover, and it was, you know, people either loved it or hated it. But they had an opinion. Yeah.
Chris is disappointed that he didn't get the issue.
Yeah. I just think, I really hate at the moment, doesn't matter what it is, you're either with something or you're against it. Do you remember George Bush and the, like, early 2000s was always like, you're with us or you're with the terrorists, you know? Like, there's lots of things at the moment. Like, I'm very pro gender equality, but I really don't like what a lot of feminists put out on Facebook as their key issues, you know? Like, certainly I'm very anti-religious and I fully defend everyone's right to have whatever crazy religion they believe in. But I think that there's a lot of, like, duality, you know? Is it duality? Is that the word?
There's a lot
of duality in everything. And I think it goes back to the Greyhounds, you know, where they kind of, it's either right or wrong, you know? Glenn McGrath going hunting to kill elephants, you know? Why is an elephant any more important than a pig?
And that was quite a few years ago, too. My sister was just telling me about that before. And he's a cricketer, isn't he? Glenn McGrath?
Yeah.
And his wife passed over from cancer, and he set up a cancer foundation for her. All pink washing, but that's come out that he killed some elephants or something in Africa in 2008, I believe, and now it's quite, you know, almost 8 years ago, isn't it? And so why is that a problem now? I don't understand that.
Yeah, and it said that he apologized, like, he didn't look very apologetic, smiling next to an animal holding a gun going, You know, like even if you are sorry you did something, you're sorry about getting caught. That's what you're sorry about.
But also, like, people change over the years too. Like, if he did that in 2008, some of the stuff that I did in 2008 I might not agree with anymore or might not do anymore. So, you know, I think people need to be a bit more accepting or trying to understand people a bit more.
Yeah, I got nothing. Yeah. I completely disagree. I think, fuck him. He shouldn't have done that. I think it's a horrible thing to do. He can eat a dick. I'm never donating to breast cancer ever again.
Well, I wouldn't in general because most of it funds animal testing. And it's just what I see pinkwashing and it's ridiculous. So
Is that what you said, pinkwashing?
Yeah, pinkwashing.
Is that what pinkwashing is?
Yeah, it's like greenwashing. It's people that are saying they're helping charities and they put pink all over everything. And does anything actually happen for it?
Is that actually a thing or do you make it up, pinkwashing?
No, I can't take credit. I think Lee Chantel
could have made that up. We all know how much pink she wears or uses on websites. Unbelievable.
I didn't come up with a name. But yeah, I don't agree with anyone killing any animals whatsoever. And but yeah, it's just the same thing like you were saying. Why does an elephant differ from a dog, differ from a cow? Like, they don't, so...
I'm glad you said cow, not cat, because if it was a cat, I literally don't care if a cat gets in my I do cats. Not care.
Yeah, you don't like cats, do you?
No.
Cats what did they ever do to you?
Piss in my house. I hate cats. What did cats ever do for anyone? It's such a ridiculous pet to domesticate.
They're so lovely. But why do we need to domesticate animals? We don't.
Because people love crap pets. Mm. Like dogs, I get dogs. I know why people have dogs. I know.
You're in Japan, man. You can go to a shop and buy a wallaby or an owl in a pet store.
I haven't seen that. I haven't seen any exotic pets.
Yeah, I was over there, I saw an owl and something else that shouldn't have been in a pet store. I haven't seen the wallaby, but friends have seen a wallaby in a pet store.
Yeah, I've actually heard a lot about it. And I've seen a guy who's got like a falcon out the front of his house that he kind of takes for a walk, and the falcon's got like a little thing around it. He like unclips it and it flies up the street and flies back, you know? Yeah, but like such a crazy pet. Who has a falcon as a pet? Such a crazy pet.
Yeah.
I remember actually when I was in Ubud in Bali, and that a lot of the people over there would just hold these animals captive. And so some of my Chinese Buddhist friends I was over there with, they took me to a place they thought I'd really like because, you know, they all liked animals and stuff like that. And there were tigers, there were macaws, all these, like, exotic animals in these tiny little cages just in the middle of the street somewhere next to, like, a bakery or something, because we had to go to the bakery to get maybe full moon cakes or something like that. And I'm just like, this is ridiculous. And there was a deer just walking along and people were coming in and out. And it's still painful in my head, actually. But they tried to stop the person who owned them. They tried to stop him from having the animals there and find him or something.
Yeah.
But then when he didn't do anything, the animals just wouldn't eat. So it's like, the government or the local sort of government didn't really have anything they could do from it. Once the animals are sort of bought, they have no control whatsoever, which is really sad. And you'd be pleased to know, Chris, we were also talking about our friend Nigel and his partner who'd been to Japan recently. So they had a really good time. So Nigel and hopefully his girlfriend Christina will join us on our podcast in the future.
Oh, excellent. So I lent them my little tip guidebook just before leaving. So hopefully that was some use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he said he found it. He got 3 or 4 places from there. So we're all interconnected. See how everyone's connecting.
Yeah, Deepak. It's quantum connectiveness.
Is it? Mm-hmm.
No, not really. Deepak Chopra's a friggin' snake oil salesman.
Well, it's just good to connect people that have like-minded interests or who are going overseas and doing similar stuff.
Sharing advice and stuff.
I think that's always good, yeah.
You were quite doom and gloom about Japan and vegan, which I can totally understand.
But like, you know when you're here, like, you know, you go to Melbourne, like, I didn't try all the places that I could have in Melbourne,
yeah.
You know? Like, if I went to a different one every week, maybe I could have, you know? But I didn't try them all because there's so many. There's, like, 67 places or something. And, like, there seems to be a new one every week. But, like, you know, in Brisbane, I kind of tried them all because I lived there for 30 years. Here, I tried them all the first week, you know?
So you, like, should have paced yourself? Is that what you're saying?
What, and then have them all tried by the fourth week?
By a month, yeah. And then just replay. Go back.
But, yeah, and
you've
none
heard
of them...
the news about Kuan Yin?
Yeah, horrible.
And Kuan
but
Yin...
they're doing, like, home delivery or something.
So tell me what Kuan Yin is, Chris.
The best, in my opinion, the best vegan restaurant in Australia. Or was. Hole. Was the best vegan restaurant.
Well, there's a number of reasons why I'd probably agree with that, because... just the cheap, how cheap it is.
Value for money.
Value for money is phenomenal. Like, main meals were like $10, and like...
Remember, like, say 5 years ago, $6.90 for a full meal? Crazy. Yeah. That was crazy. I remember going there and spending like $47 and like feeding me, my mum, my dad, my grandma, my brother, my sister. You know, it was extremely cheap. Oh, my sister-in-law...
Remember when we did that big, like, there was, like, 20 of us or something, and we, you know, some of your friends, like, punk, was it the Straight Edge people were on tour or something, and and we all went there, and because we had the table who ordered or ate the most, we had our photo up on the wall for years,
the
and
wall
now
of fame.
It'll be down. Oh, no, I forgot about that.
But, you know, someone broke that about 3 weeks after because of, we were the second, I think.
No, we had
the record, and then someone broke it, like, and another Triple Z group. Bastards.
Oh, yeah, about Triple Z. Hey, the kids with class, it's just not the same without you, my friend.
Really?
Yeah.
And what's
I've heard
class?
That.
What's tell people what 4ZZZ and kids with class is.
I think I have before. Triple Z is the greatest radio station in the world. And in my opinion, Kids with Class was the best show. But
so 4ZZZ is a local Brisbane radio station that you can find on 4, the number, ZZZZZ, .org.au,
that's
I believe.
That's the one,
yeah. And what's
you
the Kids with
it.
Class?
So that was a show that Mr. Chris Jackson was on. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, you can feel it. Chris has actually got a 4ZZZ tattoo. Like, he's quite dedicated to the cause, you know.
I love 4ZZZ.
It is a true community radio station. The shows that are on there is from prisoner shows that are, like, letting prisoners do shout-outs to family, requesting songs, to queer and transgender shows, to...
But have you ever listened to a radio station that's more from the heart, you know?
Yeah.
There's, like, I've never come across a bunch of people that are as genuine as the people there, you know? Like, you could go into an animal rights... show on there if you wanted to. There's an anarchy show. There's a show about local art. There's a local sports show. Yeah, it's seriously an amazing place. And I can't wait for when Jeremy has his show there.
Are you gonna have
It'll have to happen soon. I think having a show about, you know, like, community works, like, I think that's what your show would be. I don't think you could do a zine show, but it'd suck.
I'd be down for that. Such a big supporter of that radio station. It is just such a platform for refugees or anyone that just needs a platform to voice their anything. It's such a great station. And, you know, you can stream it, so, yeah, do check it out. But, yeah, you know, why not go, you know, do something on your local community radio station? I do know that, like, a lot of community radio stations are old people reading the newspaper out. Why not go change it? Go, like... you know, go become a member and, like, suggest a show, you know? I know growing up in Toowoomba, 4DDB was the community radio station there, and I had a show for a year or two there, and it was just a lot of fun, and it built a little community, and, you know, I think that's what the radio is really great for.
Mm.
Yeah, and if you think about it, I think I wouldn't know 90% of the people that I know now if it wasn't for that radio station. People I met through the local music scene, people I met, like, the Homefest people, you know? I think Homefest was definitely through, definitely through Triple Z, because I'm I think I met Lee Chantel through Triple Z. Well, not through Triple Z, but, you know, a Triple Z connected thing.
Yep.
So, a lot of stuff in my life.
We met through Sea Shepherd people.
Yeah, but I kind of got involved in Sea Shepherd through Triple Z. So,
yeah.
A lot of stuff happened through that. It was like the Ramones, you know, like the Ramones went through a town and all of a sudden there was 15 great punk bands in that town, you know, and I think that's what Triple Z's like. I think there's, you know, so many wonderful roots were, or so many seeds turned to trees or whatever happened.
Yeah, totally. I think, you know, Brisbane is a place that, like, lots of things sort of grew from that are quite special. I think, for me, I'm quite passionate, and one day there will be a documentary, a really good documentary about the Saints, for example, where, you know, people can say, like, they could be the first true punk band, and, you know, like, it's just amazing that, like, a backwater town in Australia, like, released the first ever 7-inch punk single, like, even before, you know, The Damned or any of these other, you know, legendary punk bands, that this band that, you know, in the underground circles, the Saints are an amazing band, but in the mainstream, the majority of people have no idea who they are.
They know two songs.
Yeah.
And one of them's a Radio Birdman song.
Yeah.
What are your plans for the rest of the week?
Still painting.
Yeah.
I got so ridiculous amounts of painting to do. So did I say I did the first coat today?
Yeah, you said you did the.
What did I say? I finished painting. I finished the first coat today. So tomorrow we're gonna do a much bigger coat than later in the week. Yeah, I don't know. Screw some beds together.
So your backpackers is called Swear Words. Are you gonna?
No, it's actually going to be, the first one's going to be called Four Letter Words, and it's just a pop-up.
Okay.
I'm going to do it pop-up style, and I've kind of organized like a little bit of media around it being a pop-up backpackers, and from what I can tell, everywhere, like, doesn't matter where it is on the face of the planet, I can't find another pop-up backpackers anywhere.
How is it a pop-up? We got some tents in a backyard, and you're going to take them down? What are we talking here?
No, like, It's a little tiny bit clandestine, you know, like we're setting it up. We're using, you know, Japan's famous for having very rigid laws that are like chock-a-block full of loopholes. So we're operating within a loophole, you know. So, yeah, it's very clandestine and, yeah, but cool. It's going to be cool. It'll be, you know, like a good B&B but with a backpacker vibe.
Cool.
And, you know, pop-up to some people, it just means opening a space for a short amount of time. So it's a good, that's a good way. That's how a lot of, like, say, vegan eateries and that start.
Yep.
Yeah, and this is definitely just, so I've worked for, like, the last 10 years of my life having shitty jobs that I've always hated, and I've kind of made enough money where I can invest in something and kind of do it without really getting a loan, you know? So I can open this place up very cheap, and use this as a stepping stone to opening up a much bigger place.
Mm.
Yeah, so it's also a massive learning. I've never owned anything like this before, so, you know, a bit of a learning curve for me.
Definitely. Good luck with it. Keep us updated. Hey, Jeremy, have you got, like, a top five or something to give us?
A top five.
Yeah, a top five what?
Yeah, so I wrote a bit of a list of the top. I guess I think it's top four or five places that I ate while I was in New Zealand. Have you ever been to the Sunflower Thai place in Auckland, Chris?
I've been to Auckland twice, and, like, both times for flying out.
Okay. So have you been to New Zealand, Elsie?
As a youngster, with the family, when I don't really remember. The only thing I remember is I was coughing or something, and Dad shut me outside of the van or whatever we were staying in.
Because you were too loud?
Because I was coughing all the time or something.
Wow, that's choice, bro.
Nah,
that's pretty harsh.
Yeah, actually, talking about choice, bro, the New Zealanders have adopted g'day.
Really?
The number of people that said g'day to me. And
just because you were Australian?
No, before I even opened my mouth.
Really? What about hard out, bro?
Hard out, no. Choice and bro, definitely. Mm-hmm. Sweet as, you know, plenty of that action.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the Sunflower, which is an Asian place, very similar to Kuan Yin. So I was, you know, I was mourning the loss of Kuan Yin, and I could actually get this Sunflower Thai stuff, which was awesome. Because I just went through Hamilton, which is about, I think it's about 40 minutes, an hour out of Auckland. They've got a, it's actually just called Vegan Buffet.
Yeah.
And the way that they work it is you fill your plate up and they weigh it.
Yeah, I love that.
And
the
weight. Chris, when you go to Kyoto next, or whenever you do, there is a vegan buffet there.
Is there?
Yep.
A vegan buffet?
Yes. Look at his eyes.
He's so excited. Hasn't had this for months.
Wow.
Book the trip now.
We'll go this weekend.
Mickey, did you hear that?
Is it on Blue Cow?
Happy Cow?
It should be. See, Nigel's got the book. I would look it up in the book, but it should be on Happy Cow. If you just type in... Actually, I tried to find it, like, just via an internet search, and I couldn't find it. But it should be on Happy Cow.
We'll have to ask Nigel about that. Yeah. So vegan, what are the buffet. Other... You said about sunflower, Jeremy, and we got...
Yeah,
Completely sidetracked, as we do.
But
what
yes.
What are the others?
So there's an amazing handmade dessert shop that does three or four vegan desserts that are just... these decadent desserts that, you know, the hours of preparation and stuff like that. And it's actually right next to the Britomart main train station. So it's actually... I think it's nearly attached to the space. I think it's called Melisse, I think it's called. So amazing.
Yeah.
The ice creams and little desserts.
Cool.
So good. In Wellington, it's sort of like, I don't know, there's the Wellington, a lot of people describe it as a little Melbourne.
Mm,
and it
cool.
sort of is. It's a pretty hip and cool and all the cool kids hang out on Cuba Street. And it's sort of a little bit overwhelming when you've spent like 4 weeks camping in the bush. And
Did you know that Wellington's got more cafes per head of population than anywhere else in the world?
I did. I heard that, and also something else as well that was like also bars, I think, as well. Like,
really?
Yep. Like, because that's one thing that I really did enjoy. The craft beer in New Zealand, they're going crazy.
Mm.
Like, there is so many craft beer brewers in New Zealand that are doing some amazing beers. So good.
I went to a pub. Is Hamilton near Wellington?
No, Hamilton's like an hour from Auckland.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
What else is near Wellington? Lower Hutt.
Yep, Lower and Upper Hutt. Yep.
So I went to a bar in Lower Hutt. Or Nelson. Is Nelson at the top? Nelson or Picton, one of the ones.
Yeah.
Anyway, Lower Hutt or Upper Hutt, the first one you get to, I went to a bar and it was segregated. They had a segregated bar there. This is like in 2005, maybe 2004.
Whoa, that's Golly. Crazy.
Crazy.
But yeah, Wellington, the little Cuba Street that's just like, it's, you know, I call it like the Frankie, all the Frankie shops where you buy all the cute stuff and like the tattoo shops. And there's actually, like, an amazing vegan place there. Auntie Menna's, I think it's what it's called. Awesome. I think I ate there, like, 3 times.
Mm.
But it didn't make the top 5?
Definitely.
This is. Yeah, he's still going through the top 5.
Definitely.
Oh, okay.
Definitely.
Okay.
That'd probably be 1 or 2. Like, it was so good. Midnight Espresso, which is a cafe, but huge amount of vegan stuff and their vegan desserts.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. I thought of you when I was having this massive chocolate cake, and I'm just like... This is so good.
Seriously, such a good name too. Midnight Espresso.
Yeah. And I think one thing that I actually discovered, that it's a New Zealand burger chain, but there's actually one in Brisbane, which I'm quite stoked about. Burger Fuel. They have 3 veggie burgers, and they actually have it on the menu as like, and it's actually written to make this vegan do this, and they're using a separate grill, no cross-contamination.
Right.
So they're very, like, it was just nice to like, I don't know, we all know what vegan cafes and restaurants are like. They're all operating on these hippie hours and closed on stupid days. Burger Fuel, just, you know, it is the comparable to your fast food chains. And they do 3 different, like, vegan burgers.
Wow.
So I'm going to go check that out in Brisbane.
So where
as well.
Is that in Brisbane?
At the Emporium.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. I heard, I'm actually really craving a burrito recently, so I'm really looking for the best vegan Mexican in Brisbane. So please tweet me or email me if you know why it's the best.
What do you think is the best, Chris?
I love Guzman Y. Gomez.
No.
Why not? I just like, because you know it's kind of like,
it's very...
South Mexican style. Like, I like fresh Mexican.
Yeah.
But GYG is also, like, it's so earthy food, you know?
And it's not as hot. I heard it's they don't spice stuff up a bit.
No.
I
and it's
because that's the way the food is. Like, if you go to, say, Baja, That's Baja styles, like the coriander and the lemon juice. Coriander. But it just doesn't, like, it doesn't match because they use the spices and fresh.
Mm.
It doesn't taste right. But what's
Chris, Chris, you introduced me to the Californian style.
Yeah, California style rolls are the best. That, like, that's Baja style, right? So that's, that's so, like, fresh coriander with lemon juice and shit like that. Where was that at?
But no, you, Tucker, I think the California style that I was talking about is the hot chips down the middle of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But that, like, they have...
Yeah. Oh, no, I can't.
Yeah. So
good. No, I just want the beans and the rice and all the other stuff. Don't want deep-fried potatoes. Ugh.
It's I hate potatoes, particularly when they're fried.
Are you kidding me? Deep fried anything, to be honest.
I think like I think my pick is probably the taqueria. Like it's fresh ingredients and
is that the one
opposite the gym, right center there
in the valley?
Yeah. So that's Baja style. That's like real fresh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that stuff. But like, if I'm gonna eat it every day, if I had to choose one, Guzman Y Gomez.
Well, I guess it's good that it's accessible. Like, it's sort of a... Is it an Australian chain? I don't know, but, like...
I don't know. I think it was started in Sydney, but
can you actually get burritos in your neighbourhood?
Yeah, there's actually one that's almost on my street. If I walk to the end of my street and then walk... So, you've been to Shinsaibashi before?
Yeah.
I live east of Shinsaibashi.
Okay.
Right? So, looking at the map. So, if I walk directly west, I walk one street north and directly west... It puts me in this part of the town called Yotsubashi. Do you remember that?
There was a
train line. So Shinsaibashi and Yotsubashi, yep. that's the station that's connected.
Yep.
And then if you come up from Yotsubashi Station, there's a Mexican place right there. And randomly, there's like a Mexican gift shop on the same street, like 200 meters down, with two people that don't talk to each other, don't know each other.
Oh.
Yeah, so they can do you a vegan burrito, no worries?
Yeah, they can do me a California style, wow. Begrudgingly. Yeah.
Yep.
Good.
Coriander, avocado, they got the whole deal.
Awesome.
Good, yeah. Sounds great. Yeah. So, I'm just going
to... You'll have to come over, LC. You'll love it.
Dude, I'm coming.
Beautiful burrito, so juicy.
I'm coming over. I'm bringing the bike. I'm going to come and work for you. I'm going to do the whole experience. I'm coming.
Yeah, awesome. I'd love to do a leg on the bike with you.
Sweet.
I plan to do from the very north,
yep.
And even like doing rowing as well, or like row across the bay.
Cool.
But I heard it's a bit of it, like it's a real currenty, like from Hokkaido to Honshu, like it's such a big current. You'd like go, you know, if you went right from the west part, you'd probably hit China.
I'd just like to thank Jeremy Staples for joining us today, and you can see more of what he gets up to at thestaples.com.au, and he's across all social media channels as well. And if you want to hear any other new podcasts, I interviewed Nick from Progressive Podcast Australia recently, and he interviewed me as well, and you can find that on progressivepodcastaustralia.com. We talk about a lot of things like Facebook being evil, how to communicate better online, and many different things, and see YouTube for more. What do you love?
I love how everyone that's into social media hates Facebook.
Yeah. Like, it pains.
Remember we were talking before about crazy double standards?
Yeah. Well, you have the issue is, Chris, you have to be on there, like, because the majority of people are on there, so you have to be there. So thanks, Jeremy, for coming up with this great idea.
Yeah.
Chris and I doing the podcast together.
It's actually a lot more difficult with three people.
Yeah, I got in there. I'm the third wheel.
But I think
when your hostel backpackers is open and the stories that you're going to be able to add and the things you see and do, wow, the show is just going to peak, isn't it?
Yeah. But, you know, the thing is, most of the stuff, like, if it's someone else's story, you kind of feel a little bit uncomfortable about telling it because they'll go, hang on a minute, that happened to me, not you, you know?
Are people like that? I don't think so. As long as you're not saying mean things about them. Thank you very much, Jeremy Staples.
Thank you.
Thank you as always, Chris.
Thank you.
Make sure you download this on Podomatic, Stitcher, iTunes, Scatter Radio, etc. Or you can
download this one.
Or you can watch.
Download our other ones, she means.
Download this and our other ones, whatever.
They've already downloaded. If they can hear that, they've downloaded it.
If they're hearing it, they might be just listening online, not actually downloading. So yeah, download them all. If you'd like to be a guest, send me an email, and we look forward to sharing whatever we're up to at the next time we meet.
What's your email address, just for?
The email address is email@vivalavegan.net. If you'd like to contact me, please contact me through vivalavegan.net, or across all the social media channels: Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Google+, Pinterest, etc.
All over.
See, I think Pinterest is evil.
Pinterest is so good. It's like one of the best things to get traffic to your website. Most social media channels, it's just all within the social media channel, whereas Pinterest can actually link to your site. Ask Martha Stewart. She's had great success.
Yeah. In prison.
Okay, thank you, everyone.